Welcome to the Share Life podcast with Jason Scott Montoya, where we explore stories and systems to live better and work smarter. Welcome to this Listen to Learn episode of the Share Life podcast. I'm Jason Scott Montoya, and today I'm here with two friends to discuss the writing process. We have Tess Vanney. Tess, say hello.
Hello.
And we also have Jim Carwish. Jim, say hello.
Hello, everyone.
Thank you for both joining me today. We're going to discuss the writing process. How does one go about cultivating ideas, bringing them to life, and publishing, both in short form, whether it's social media posts or articles and blogs, or long form like books and things of that like. So we're going to discuss how to simplify writing. We're going to talk about a framework that I and a few others developed called IDEMA. We'll talk about the writer's garden, building daily habits, and the intersection of writing processes as well as ad hoc or improv types of activities. So we're going to dive in, but I want to start and talk about how systems simplify writing. We're going to talk, kind of dissect that a little bit, but I wanted to start and just kind of introduce my own journey into writing as far as it goes with like my personal website, jasonscottmontoya.com, and publishing blog posts. So I set up this site. I really didn't start blogging until 2014 regularly, but a few years before that, I actually bought the domain because I had a friend that was blogging. I was like, oh, I should do that. He's doing it. And I did a couple posts, but it never went anywhere because I didn't have a system and I wasn't fully committed as well. But one of the things that really helped me, and we'll dive into this more, was about habits. From 2009, 2010 to 2014, before I started publishing, I was actually journaling in my Evernote fairly regularly for myself. So for about 3-4 years, I had had a system, a very simple system, and I would create stuff. And then sometimes I would share with it, but I would just share private links to these writings. I wouldn't publish it. So then 2014, by the time I got to that point, I had already a system in place. So when I was ready, I was able to just kind of hit the ground running. So systems, for me, I'm always thinking about how do I sort of streamline this process so I get more done in less amount of time, or I'm able to overcome roadblocks that I might naturally have. And my blogging has definitely kind of evolved from in different seasons. I've done blogging challenges, different things to kind of help me cultivate those muscles that I did not have. But those are a few thoughts I have. Jim, you know, I'll throw it to you. When you think about systems and how they simplify writing, like, what do you think about it?
Sure. So the output of my work is often unpublished as well. It either goes into a category of I'm going to be speaking about this particular thing and I want my thoughts to be extremely clear, or this is going to be a part of the book that I'm writing, or this is going to be a part of an email that I'm going to send out, or some sort of a deliverable that would go to clients after a talk or after a workshop. So when I think about it, I think what is the smallest atom, like what's the mm-hmm. tiniest piece of story, what's the tiniest piece of a writing piece, and then what is the end result needing to be? So my approach is pretty much the same regardless of how many words are going to be coming out the other end or where it's going to be published, but the depth, I think, and the amount of time that you've molded over. So when you talked about it a minute ago, you talked about the writer's garden, something that is going to be take 30 minutes or 45 minutes to read is going to have been in the writer's garden much longer than something that is just going to take 3 minutes to read.
Which is a wild thing, right? Just to think like, wow, we spent that a lot of time for this short thing. Which, you know, that's how it is, but it's just interesting that that's how it is.
And the complexity of the thought, I think pretty much anybody out there who, and now with ChatGPT, I think that pretty much anybody can just say, what are the three main points that I want to discover about this thing? What are three things that I can say about this? And before you know it, they've got something that they think is ready to publish. I think when I have ideas or when I have things that seem to resonate with people, they go in as a seed into the writer's garden. And then I compare them with other elements and systematically work through the garden. So I'm looking first each time that I go in at the atomic level, just what are the new seeds that are in there? And then I look categorically at each more grown, more ripe or more harvestable content. Or I've been assigned something that I need to get done ASAP. Like a client hired me to talk about a very specific thing, and that's going to be happening in 2 weeks. So I need to get on it. In which case I'm mining more than I'm gardening. I'm going back to everything that I've got. I'm going back to all the things that I've read. I'm going back to all the little snippets that I've collected about that. And I'm harvesting very, very rapidly, which is part of the reason that I can succeed at speaking extemporaneously, speaking in front of groups and doing improv, is the same reason that I can write well, is because of this taking ideas apart, looking at them at a very, very small component. What is the purest or smallest version of this idea? And then how do those ideas match together to be something that maybe nobody has talked about before, or maybe very few people are talking about it from that angle?
Yeah, it's interesting you talk about the harvesting part, because one thing that comes to mind is there's a person, a psychologist who does a lot of speaking, called Jordan Peterson, and he wrote a book called Maps of Meaning, and I heard a lot of his lectures, and it was like very much like you're talking about, wow, he's like got so much going on, and then I read the book and I was like, wow, it's all in the book, and essentially he spent 10 years like planting those seeds and developing them. And then he had all of this content to work from and speak from, and he had his own unique perspective. And so I can definitely relate to that, what you said in terms of my own experience and just, you know, my own seeds. And sometimes we have conversations with people where those seeds, like that is a catalyst to sort of sprout the seed and bring it to life. So that's interesting. Is there any dynamic there that ties in? Cause you work, you do a lot of coaching to help people understand the narratives that are in their head that are shaping how they think and act. Is there anything that tethers into that in terms of the system and the simplification of writing?
Well, the more that I have broken apart the elements of narrative and of writing and analyzed these different components, the more that easily I can recognize someone's story and how that story is similar to or different than something else that they might have told me two stories back to back that are wildly different and have different components to them. They might be telling me a story that follows exactly another client that I've had, or a very clear example of somebody else who went through exactly the same thing. And so a lot of times the things that people are caught up in or hung up on, the things that are preventing them from moving forward, are in those very elements that we're looking at when we're trying to write. So what are the components that could be used for great writing and also could be used to get you? I don't know how far we want to go into the narrative world specifically, rather than just writing, competent writing, technical writing for the paycheck, right? The things that we do to put the food on the table. But I think that the narrative I don't want to go too far down that path. I think I'm going to put the brakes on what I was just going to say, because I think that's too much about narrative. But I think the more that we understand the components of the human experience, and we understand that what is really makes for a great story is the opposite of what makes for a happy day, like a day that you could just say, oh, that was just such a nice day we had. That's the opposite of a good story. And the things that we're striving for and to be told, how was work today? It was great. Everyone was nice to me. People got me what they needed. And we just, everybody did what they were supposed to, is the worst story you've ever heard. Nobody would want to hear that story at the dinner table, but everybody would be happy for you, because that's what we want in life, is we want things to go our way. But the stories that we're engrossed in and that we'll go sit and watch 3 hours of at the movie theater are based on things not going our way and things getting in our path and things, causing us to have to take 3 steps back before we can take a step forward.
So Tess, let's sort of to you. You're a professional writer. You write in the medical space, you write in the manufacturing space. So you're kind of doing what Jim is talking about. You're writing about things that, how do you make these products interesting? So tell us, you know, and you also wrote this article about system simplifying writing. We'll link that in the notes, but tell us how you're looking at this topic at this angle.
Yeah. Well, a lot of the things you were saying, Jim, really resonate with me. I'm reading a book called right here, Made to Stick.
Uh-huh. Okay.
Yeah. And they talk about boiling an idea down to one of the smallest possible one sentence, very, very short, very easy to understand, and then going back up from there. And that's how you're going to help someone remember something.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So
that was very cool. And I think a lot of the writing that I do, in order for it to be persuasive, it has to show change. So if it's everything is good and then everything was good again, no one's going to be interested in your product. Okay. You need to show things were hard and then they used this product and now look at this wild success and look how it's been changing the world. So that's some really good points.
And so how long have you been writing vocationally?
I have been writing professionally for 11 years now.
Okay. And how have systems played a role for you? And did they start at the beginning, or was it something like after a few years you're like, man, I need some systems. Like, how did that evolve for you?
Yeah. When I think about it, I think of two ways. I think the first, my intro to writing was a manual for an industrial oven company.
Okay.
They baked solar chips in this massive oven. You could walk in. It was so big. And I didn't have any experience as a technical writer or as an engineer. So I knew nothing about how to bake solar chips. And I knew nothing about like anything of the process. I just knew how to follow directions and how to write well. And so my colleague, Kirk Livingston, who's not on the podcast, but he had a system in place for writing manuals. And I was able to follow it and get a bunch of them published. And it worked out. So having like step-by-step directions of, I like to call it our manual generator, because we were able to just pump them out.
Yeah.
Was super, like, you can accomplish anything when you have systems in place for completing projects.
Yeah. Well, one of the things that I found that systems are helpful for is if I figure out the system and then have it implemented, I don't have to think while I'm doing the work. I can just focus on the work and then the next step. Do you find that as well, or would you add anything to that?
Yeah, I think absolutely. Like, writing can feel like a very organic process, but there are days when you wake up and you don't want to do it, or like times that you feel stuck on a project, and the system is kind of this mechanical structure that gets you moving forward, even when you feel stuck.
Yeah.
Or at least you can spend 20 minutes doing a little bit more research and just get a little farther. It really helps you kind of move forward in your work.
Yeah, that's cool. So the way I framed it, the way you wrote about it, was how systems simplify writing. Let's flip it. What does it look like when systems complicate writing?
Hmm. That's a really good question. I think of that sometimes in work with clients. It feels like if they have a system they want you to use, but you don't necessarily vibe with the system, then it can actually make the process way harder.
That's a good point. Go ahead, Jim.
Sorry about that. Going over and through a process that you haven't evaluated, which when we talk about IDEMA in a little bit, and you look at how well IDEMA is plotted out, sometimes we'll create for ourselves habits in relationship to our writing, and we think of them as systems, and there are components of them that really are the working system. But then we add elements that are not necessary. They're things that have worked, but maybe won't work all the time, or they're unnecessary, or they're things that are bad habits that pull us out of a flow state when we're trying to get something done. And so I think an opportunity to evaluate the system that you're talking about. So that's when I notice systems that are getting in the way the most, is when someone who has come to me for coaching, their actual problem is they're not getting what they need to get written. That's the number. I mean, I've probably had fewer than 10 clients in my lifetime that have all been purely focused on writing, but each time some component of how they're stuck is that they have a system, they feel like they know how to do their job, and yet they're stuck. And one of the elements that can get them stuck is if that system isn't working for you, if it's a system that had its place, but now there are elements of it that are not right. So that evaluation, the analysis later on, I think is really useful.
Yeah. And yeah, that's such a great connection to IDEMA. And for people that don't know what IDEMA is, it's an acronym for these five stages. So the I is ideate. Everything, we start out by ideating, then we discover the ideas, then we execute the ideas, then we maintain those executed ideas, and then we audit those maintained ideas. And it's a cycle, right? And the idea is that everything starts and moves through those steps, whether we acknowledge them or not. I've just sort of labeled what's already real, right, in a particular way. And there's other frameworks out there that do something similar. But the way that we designed that was, we were kind of stuck between project management, a lack, kind of the chaos of not having clear project management, and having, project managers like run away screaming in the chaos. So we kind of sat down and was like, okay, all these project managers are leaving. Maybe the problem's us. So we kind of came up with this, but what I discovered is, as it relates to what you said, Jim, is the IDEMA was a great process for me as a creative person to have structure. So someone who's more naturally inclined to like bounce around the world in all different directions, this was enough structure that kind of gave me direction, but also freedom. And it's kind of this underlying framework that kind of, that is in all of what I do, every project management, everything, my freelancing, my client work, that's underneath it, in a very intentional way. And so, what are you, I know, Jim, you've kind of, explored IDEMA over the years, Tess, it's new for you. But Jim, why don't you start and tell us, you know, how does IDEMA connect with you, and how do you think about it and use it?
Sure. Well, most of the things that I talk about, I talk about them in metaphor. So why should this be any different? So IDEMA for me, the way that I relate to it is, if you've ever watched people that are competitive in the area of surfing or being on a surfboard out in the ocean, and talking about, you know, the bigger waves, the ones where people are trying to catch these giant waves, there's the trying to find the right wave, getting out under your own power, getting adjusted and everything so that you can maybe catch a wave, or maybe you're going to do it quite right. But there are also people that will take you, and they will pull you behind a ski-doo out into the ocean. You're behind them, and they pull you to the right place so that you're aligned just right. And then they let you go, and they get out of there so they don't deal with the wave. And now you are primed in the perfect spot. And if anything goes wrong here, it's not because they didn't put you in the right spot. It's something's going on with you, right?
Yeah.
So when I think about IDEMA has never failed me, because it is, it's broken down, and its components can't be any more broken down, in my opinion. Each category along the way has been taken to its core. It has a very specific purpose, and those purposes haven't gotten muddled over time because it's been named and labeled. So IDEMA does what it does. It doesn't get convoluted. It doesn't have a bunch of extraneous stuff to it. So when I think about which one of those areas am I working in, it's very similar to the writer's garden. Where in the garden am I stepping in? What is it I'm expecting to see there? What type of function am I expecting to have to do while I'm there? And if I understand what's going on, and I'm prepared to have things be easier for me because I have a system, I go in less stressed. I go in much more susceptible to getting into a flow state. Improv talks a lot about, or in improv, I talk a lot about flow state, because what you want is to get into a place where everything's just going, because it's all being written in the moment, and is all, everyone's trying to be aligned together to create something together and move forward with the story. So I pay a lot of attention to flow state. And if I can get into a good flow state of writing and stay there, and it's because of a system, that's gold, in my opinion.
Yeah. Tess, what about you? What do you think about IDEMA and as you've been introduced to it?
Yeah. Yep. Yeah, I think the flow state is also important in writing, because that's when we often are communicating our thoughts in the best way. And so if we can have systems that don't stop us from getting in the flow state, but keep us there, mm-hmm. it's amazing. And now I want to try surfboarding with surfing the way that you described it, because I have tried it. It's very difficult. But yeah, I want to start using that in my writing, especially because I think we often miss that last step, the auditing, when you go mm-hmm. back and you look over what you've written or what you've done.
Yeah.
And and revise and see where things fit. And yeah, I think that's a really important part of the whole process that can get ignored sometimes.
Yeah, I think from my own experience, and one of the areas that I specialize in is that auditing layer when it comes to online content libraries, particularly from an SEO standpoint. A lot of companies, individuals, leaders, authors, trainers, they create and abandon. So they create a blog post, they create a blog post, and then before they know it, they got 300, 400, 500, 600 articles. But they haven't done anything with them other than since they published them. And the thing with how Google works is if you go back and you just make some tweaks and you make some small updates to that old content, it tells Google that you're keeping your content, you're keeping the garden fresh, you're weeding it, mm-hmm. you're doing things, and it gives you more influence and ranks you higher on things. And so the things that I do as a freelancer is I go in and I dust things off and I...
shows up on Google at a higher level. So I want to talk kind of shift. So IDEMA is the framework that underlies the writer's garden. And so one of the things that I did, and this is becomes more vital when people are writing in volume. So one of the people that inspired me the most in terms of blogging was Seth Godin, right? He does every day. It's a new post. And when I started blogging in 2014, then I started getting freelancing work. And so I started to fade a little bit. But it was a blogging challenge that him and some of his colleagues or some people he was with, they did this challenge. And so I participated in that challenge. And then me and Jim have done a weekday blogging challenge. I think I've done 2 or 3 weekday blogging challenges for like, I think we did one for like 3 months, where it was like every weekday for 3 months. So when you start to talk about volume, the systems become even more vital. Because it's harder to write a lot if you don't have the systems that are collecting the seeds and cultivating the seeds and developing them. So the idea of the writer's garden is that every seed of an idea, it's that same IDEMA structure. And then what I did in the maintenance stage, IDEMA, is each of the letters, is a different stage in the development of that. Let's say it's a blog post of that blog post. And then for the maintenance, I created different folders for different things. And okay, once they're in this, it's a blog post, and this is this category, and this is that category. And then even creating a system, I have an Evernote, a tag that when I have ideas to add to posts that have already published, I'll go into my Evernote and then I'll make a list of updates. And I just put in links or notes, and then I add a tag, update available. And so then that way, now I have this system to have visibility on the audit action items, and then to be able to roll those out. So next time I'm on that article, I can roll those changes out. So the writer's garden is a way of taking IDEMA and just applying it more specifically to the writing process. So Jim, I'm going to throw it to you, and you talk about your experience with the writing garden and how that's helped you or how it's hindered you.
So the writer's garden for me, I came at this from the standpoint of an improviser. And so the very first time that I realized I was in real trouble, as far as the writer's garden need, without really having fully understood what a system would mean. I don't know if that made any sense, but I was in a place where I was used to talking extemporaneously about certain topics. I had a large amount of knowledge that I was using in those talks, but suddenly I was in a blog post challenge with Jason. And after a certain number of days. I don't remember. We did it for like 3 months, and I don't remember how long it took before my extemporaneous speaking approach to writing started to be, I would get to a day and I'd be like, I don't feel like I'm ahead enough to really, do something of quality today. I felt like I have no problem with quantity. I can talk forever. I can improvise in front of people. It might be nonsense, but they'll be entertained. They'll have a good time, and you know, we'll have fun together. But if you wanted to write a blog post that had any quality to it, there needed to be more underpinning it that was really true and helpful and honest. And I started to feel like, what am I going to do here? And that was when the Writer's Garden, I don't remember exactly how, the whole conversation started with Jason and I, yeah. I don't remember where he pulled certain elements of it.
That blog post was one I did of the challenge. I'll have to look.
Yeah. But the thing that I realized was all I really needed to do was take two ideas and just stick them together and see if two ideas that were really powerful might have something to do with one another that would be worth writing about that I hadn't written about already. So it's like I covered all of these very vocabulary based blog posts, very just systematic. Here's a story, and here's the application of that story, or here's a concept that you might want to apply to your own life or to your own business. And then when it started to get really difficult, it was like, okay, what am I going to do? And I started to take ideas, and it's very improv oriented. How does this idea plus this idea get joined together into something that makes sense and is valuable, yeah, or is at least fun and entertaining? And so that was the big aha moment for me was, you're never really done with a seed. You may have grown that seed into something, but it's going to still be able to be taken at its most atomic level, at its smallest part, and be combined with something else to make something new and cool as well. I really wish I could remember the name of this game. There's an app on, I play it on iPhone, or played it on iPhone, and I think it was called Alchemy, but it was essentially you started out with just these basic elements, and you would drag an element and another element together, and then it would go blah, 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 and it would turn into some sort of machinery, or, you know, it would be like, oh, this plus this equals this. And you could grow things. You know, if you combined these two things together, you got a steamship. And if you combine the steamship plus this other thing, you got an industry or whatever.
Yeah.
And that's kind of now, writing is more playful in the same way that improv is, because when I go into the Writer's Garden, I'm not just looking to see if something needs to be audited or do I need to take this to the next level, but also you'll just walk along and think, oh, that thing that I do need to audit also has an element that I can now apply to this new thing I learned. So what's that from the perspective of the new thing? What's the old thing in perspective or in relationship to this new thing? Aha. And now you've got something new to talk about.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So what are some of the, like for me, I use Evernote, and for most of what I'm doing, and then for books, I use Google Docs. And I kind of think of it like in terms of the garden analogy, you know, you build all those raised beds and you build, you know, I'm building all these sections. I have this Google Doc and it has all the sections, and then I'm filling them in, putting in my notes and putting in, you know, my drafts of pieces. And then I also use Grammarly is a big one. But what are some of the tools you're using, Jim, to more specifically?
I'm tempted to share screen, but I think there would be a version of this that would be audio only. So I don't think that would be very helpful to everybody. I use Workflowy, which is started out as a simple outlining tool using bullets. But over time, they've added a lot of features that make it rich to the point of being able to compete with things like Airtable or with Trello or other things.
Yeah. But and that was an evolution. You used to do like sticky notes, right?
Yes, it started like out with physical. Yeah, sort of. And so when my knowledge base, so there was a point in time where all of these books that are behind me had sticky notes in them, and there were sticky notes on the walls, and there were, you know, and things in the books were underlined or highlighted or whatever. Don't kill me if you don't believe in that. But when it got to the point where I could no longer function in the physicalness of all of these sticky notes, they were either on top of each other, there was just no more space, I couldn't remember where I put something, whatever. When that started to fail me and I went digital with it, I played around with a couple of different versions of it. But Workflowy is the you can get anything that you want to down to the atomic level, and then you can relate it to something else at its atomic level. And it's very, very easy to do that because you can, everything is bullets. Every single thing in workflow is just a bullet within a bullet within a bullet. And so you could think of the whole thing as being just one giant text document if you wanted to. So when I go into something, I can zoom into that one idea and write my next concept, and then take that bullet and another bullet, compare them together, and here comes another concept, and they're all related to each other with tags, and they're all related. Mm-hmm. So finding the stuff and being able to stay organized in it is possible because I don't actually have to shuffle paper around and move things around. I can click on a tag, and that hashtag mm-hmm. will take me to where I need to go. It'll show me everything yeah. that's relevant for that topic.
Yeah.
So maintaining became a lot easier. Auditing yeah. didn't get any easier.
Yeah.
But maintaining got easier.
Tess, what would you add? Now, you know, about the idea of whatever, all the things Jim said, but also just the idea of the writer's garden. You call it in one of your blog posts the story factory, which is fun. Tell us about that.
Yeah. So when I started blogging more and also posting on LinkedIn, I had a really hard time. The story garden was very helpful for me for taking ideas when I had them and then coming upon them later and being like, wow, this works. Or when you're having a hard day, like thinking of something, coming up, going back to that and seeing that. See, where did Jim go?
Oh, I'm missing.
I still gone? See him. Did he disappear?
He did for me, but that is just fine. Yeah, I think.
I got your back. I'm still here.
Okay.
Full support.
Yeah, I think the writer's garden, your article, Jason, I don't know if you came up with that or not, but I love a good illustration. And I think that's a really good way of doing it because you take your little seeds that you don't even know what they're going to become, like a seed packet. Mm. You don't know what it's going to become. You yeah. plant it, you come back to it, you think of it again. And it grows into something beautiful eventually. But yeah. all of those things take time. And when we force ourselves to produce a lot of content every week or even daily content, you can't have that growing in your mind from the morning to the afternoon when you publish. So having a way to maintain mm. and nourish your garden is just really, really important to keeping up that habit.
Yeah.
Like Jim, what you were saying about your ideas when they're at their atomic level, and then relating them together. That really resonated with me too, because I feel like every thought you have that's unique or every learning experience, it builds on each other. Mm-hmm. And you're just going to keep getting more and more rich ideas from
yeah.
everything that you've talked mm-hmm. about before or written about or even read or acted or that kind of thing.
So. One thing you just made me think of, Tess, is a sign that I'm maturing as a human, I think. is I've gone from when I was in my, I say early 20s, I would get frustrated when something that I thought was a novel or new idea, while researching and writing it out, I would discover that somebody else had really already covered that and did a better job than I probably was going to be capable of at that time as a writer, as a thinker. And how I've matured, I think now is when you're researching and you realize that somebody else has already had this idea, that's an exciting moment because it means that you're really onto something. It resonated mm-hmm. enough to have been written before, but now you can stand. And this is another term that came up from working with Jason Montoya is you can now stand on the shoulder of whatever giant wrote that. And you can ask yourself, mm-hmm. okay, well, if somebody's already written this level of it, what's the next level? If this person wrote this 10 years ago and it's been thought of that much, what's the 2023 version of that? Or how is the world having changed made this new and different? And so now I don't have to even write something and somebody go, yeah, I've read something about that before, promptly forgets about the thing I wrote. Instead, they're like, oh, I did remember something about that, but you've added something new and fresh, I think, to that idea because you brought it into what we're dealing with today.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So, yeah.
Yeah, our own personal perspective on the topic. And I think there's just, you know, so many layers to something that can help us understand it at a deeper level. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Was there anything else you wanted to share on that topic, Tess, in terms of the writer's garden or the story factory? I guess the one question I would have for you is there a do you see a difference in how you do those things and how you use that type of structure with your personal blogging versus your client work?
Well, oftentimes with my client work, they'll have a brief ready for me. And I do sometimes, I've had some clients in the past where I've come up with ideas for them, whether it's long form pieces or short form pieces. But in general, they have their own garden or factory going on behind them, usually with their marketing team or their boss or whatever else. And I jump in and I make that bloom and I harvest their ideas and all of that. So I'm entering at like a different point in the whole process. Whereas like for my personal writing, I need to start with that little seed that I find or come up with myself in my own life.
Yeah. You got to develop your own briefs.
Yeah,
that's interesting. I know one, so I don't do much writing for my clients, because I write, part of it is because I write for myself. So it's a, I like to write, but it's not necessarily my focus in my vocational work. So I guess, how do you, because you do both, like, how do you balance that, or how do you, you know, make sure you're enjoying it and that it's fueling versus demotivating because it's your job. You know?
Yeah, for sure. So what I do is I call it my writing practice, kind of like yoga or jogging or that kind of thing. And in the morning for an hour, I write and I write about what I want to write about, which is I'm silly. Sometimes I find creative prompts online. I wrote about vampires the other day. And just letting myself indulge in describing something the best I can, getting details right, having fun. I have my own personal blog where I just publish blogs about books I like. And that helps me read, which is also really important.
Okay, that's interesting because I've I'm using a system called Upcarta. It's upcarta.com. And it's like a social media for people who like to collect content and share content, whether it's books or articles or movies or TV shows, or whatever it might be. And one of the things that I've noticed, part of it is it's a public thing. So I'm doing something to share it publicly. And a lot of I used to use a system called Pocket, which helped me save things for later, but there was no like communal or public nature. So there is a layer of motivation that comes with like consuming the piece of content, reading the book or whatever, and then sharing it, that if I'm not sharing it, I get more stuck. And so that's kind of what I'm hearing from you. Tell me more
about the writing about
just reading. The idea of like you publishing about your books that you're reading is helping you read more.
Yes. Yeah, absolutely. And my challenge was to read 2 books a month and I've been reading more than that, which is fun.
Yeah.
Especially if it's fiction.
Yeah. But I guess I'm curious how blogging about it particularly helps motivate you.
Yeah, for sure. So when I'm reading the book, I have to be thinking a little bit about what I'm going to write about. And so I keep a notebook full of notes. I like to handwrite notes sometimes because it makes me remember them better.
Yeah.
So I've got notebooks full of notes from reading.
Yeah.
And then when I write about reading, it really helps me remember what I read and it helps me process through it because you can't just like spit the facts out on the page and then hope someone reads them. Like you have to add your own spin to it.
Yeah.
Think about how it impacts your life. And it's just made the books way richer for me.
Yeah. Yeah. That's interesting. Cause I very much agree with that. And I think the best way to read a book, there's a couple layers of like how deep do you want to go? But I think, you know, highlighting is one thing, writing notes is another layer. I think reading it with someone and talking about those things is another layer. You can kind of keep going down the road And it kind of changes the whole experience of reading a book.
Yep. Yeah. It's super cool.
I think there's a, I have experienced what you're talking about. Being a coach, I experienced that on a bigger scale, I guess, a life scale, really, where when you are thinking about the things that you're doing from the aspect of sharing that with someone else or remembering something really cool that happened to you, because you have someone with whom you share your deepest secrets or your delights or your, you know, if you get home and you've got somebody that you talk to, it changes the way that you experience the thing itself. So when you're reading the book, knowing that you're going to blog about it, you read the book differently. If you live life knowing that you're going to share about it, the types of things that you run across, the easiest thing for me, but probably the hardest thing for a copywriter to think of would be stand-up comedians. They look at life from that perspective all the time, right? They're looking at the ridiculous things around them and they're enjoying that ridiculousness, whereas other people are frustrated by the ridiculousness. Mm-hmm. But the change, I'm not going to say that's true for every single stand-up comedian, but they're fascinated by, oh, that is just, no one would ever believe that. That's how awesome that particular thing that happened is. And so they're looking for those moments. And because they're looking for those moments, they experience life differently than someone who's just trying to get from point A to point B. And all of these stories are in their way. Of getting to work or getting to bed or whatever.
Yeah. I like that. I think one of the only things I would like to chat a little bit about is on that is the idea of like getting stuck in the roadblocks. Mm-hmm. And so the book I'm currently working on, I wrote two books before this one. The first one was on freelancing. The simple version of how that played out is I kind of vomited out all the stuff I knew about freelancing into one chunk. And then I realized that freelancers are really going to need like a tight knit structure. They got to be able to just like pick a section in the book and read it and not read anything else. Right. So I ended up creating this structure. I took what I vomited out and put it into those different places. And I realized, oh, I'm missing some stuff here and there. And then I need to add a section that I didn't have. So that was the content came first and then the structure came second. The second book, it was actually working on the cover of the book that helped me develop the structure, which I then put together. But I had a hard time finishing.
You're talking about the jump?
Finishing is just hard to do by yourself. And so the first book, and Jim was a part of this, I had a group of freelancers that we met once a month to go through each section. And it helped me finish the book. And then the second book, I kind of got towards the end and I just struggled to finish it. So we did a weekday blogging challenge and I blogged the rest of the book that I was missing to finish it. And then the book I'm working on now, it's called From the Garden to the Cross, and it's about Jesus' passion experience. So it's a very different book than the first two, and it's a lot bigger and more difficult than I was expecting, although I should have expected it. So I've been working on it almost 3 years now. But I've just gotten stuck in a lot of ways. So I took that idea, that first one is the group of freelancers. I said, oh, why don't I do that? But I'll just do it publicly. So there's like 13 episodes, Jim's on a couple of them, where we talked about the different sections. And that was really helpful to move the project forward. But once those all ended, I was like still stuck. So I ended up launching this little Discord community that we're in, and that helped move it along. But another thing I did is Upcardo. I have a lot of research I've done, like tons and tons of research. I got notes and quotes. And it's a lot of work to move it into the manuscript and figure out where it goes. But and this might sound a little backwards because it's more work, but it's kind of like the Apollo 13 thing. Like you have to loop around the moon to get back to Earth.
Yeah.
The gravity. But I started taking all the quotes that I had from these different books, and they just had the system for me to put the quote on there, attach it to the book, and then create a collection that has to do with my book and help me to organize them. So it was a way for me to feel like, okay, I can put these out there. Other people can benefit. It gave me this motivation. And a lot of the quotes may never end up making it to the final book. So it kind of feels like I've done this wasted effort, but by doing this process on Upcard, it helps me go like, well, at least someone will benefit if this doesn't make the final cut. But those were like some of the things that I did where I struggled. I got stuck. I am stuck. And things I did to sort of slingshot myself around the moon, Apollo 13 style, to keep the project moving. And some of these are systems and ideas that I want to kind of more formalize because I have other books that I want to write. I've already got a garden laid out for a future book where it's already taking shape and I've got pieces in it and it's, you know, but I'm trying to take the lessons from this book, which was really difficult, and create that organizing structure while I'm working on the book so that I can put stuff into those sections versus with the current book, I just created a giant pile of toys that I have to separate into their bins. And it's a lot harder than if I just grouped them while I was making the piles. So anyway, Tess, what do you think when you think about getting stuck? Are there any systems or ideas that you've implemented to help you?
Yeah. Well, I think if you were to write a book about how to finish a book, a lot of
that would be a good one.
Because I've heard a lot of people, oh, I started and I'm stuck for 20 years. For me, talking it out really helps. I have a very patient husband who will listen to me.
Yeah.
And then, of course, I do work with my coworker and we pass drafts back and forth. And that is so helpful.
Yeah.
Because if you've been thinking about something for a long time, you might not notice the big sections you've missed or what might not be clear to a reader who doesn't know anything. So bringing in someone else is hard, but it really does help the process. So I can relate with
what you've been saying. Community, accountability, all of that. Yeah.
Yep.
Collaboration. So I'll give you a chance, Tess, and then throw it to you, Jim. You know, we're kind of wrapping up here. What are your final thoughts about the writing process, about that you would want to leave people with us and close out here?
Yeah. For me, I guess sometimes writing can seem, I wrote this in my blog, but it can feel like it's organic and it can be very frustrating when it doesn't seem like it's going right for you because you have great thoughts. They're not coming out. It looks so easy for everyone else. And I think and it's not easy for anyone. And I think that's where systems are really important because they can give you a leg up on getting your product finished and getting your good ideas out there, even if it means planting your idea in the garden and coming back to it later.
Yeah.
So I think everyone can get their ideas out there, but sometimes the systems are what you need to help you.
Yeah. And I think that idea, like, it's not easy for anyone. I think that's a helpful expectation because, you know, it's a lot of work. And I think I've made that, I've shifted. I used to write a lot when I was younger, but it was, but I've kind of gotten to the point where I just love the process itself. Like I love the whole garden from beginning to end and the writing and the drafting and the editing. And that does help a lot. If you only care about the outcome, like I just want to publish a book, but you don't care about enjoy the process, I think it's going to be really hard to do that. So I think understanding that is helpful. If this is the right path for people and then how to tap into that. So,
yeah.
Jim, what final words do you have for us in this?
Yeah, I think two things. One is if you are ever writing something, I realized this after I said when I would write something and then I would research and realize that somebody else had already written this really clearly, the difference between the human that you are and the human that that other writer was can sometimes be the only needed difference when you're sharing something like that. And I, when I look at, I get a lot of inspiration by watching Jason, who's here with us, the host of this podcast. I get a lot of inspiration because the way that he approaches a lot of the same types of problems has a lot of similarities to how I approach problems, but then it has enough specific differences based on who Jason is that I delight in talking to him about things, even if what he's going to say is similar to what I'm going to say. The problem solving is a part of the problem, right? Right. Or that's a part of the thing that you're getting after, but also just who that person is can be so much for it. So if you're a writer and somebody's already written the book that you think that you want to write, if you were to write the book, it wouldn't be anything like theirs because of who you are. Same thing with a blog entry. So, I mean, Tess, I imagine working in manufacturing, writing in relationship to all of those different devices or how they can help people, something about how you put ideas together and how you formulate a narrative around a product, something about that resonates with the people. They've hired you, it works well with them. And so if I were to write something for exactly the same product with the same goal in mind, they would be probably be very, very different, right?
Yeah.
So I think if you are someone who's writing and you're just trying to be novel all the time, that you're probably going to get in your own way. I think what's novel about all of us is us. Mm-hmm. And then I think the other thing is that
let me add one thing real quick, just as a personal example. So like I'm writing this book on From the Garden of the Cross. And, you know, so many people have written books on this topic, right? Like 2000 years of history here. So what do I have to add? But I do have, I'm doing something unique. You know, I'll just give one simple example. Like there's one episode of The Simpsons that has this particular storyline about misunderstanding something. So I'm literally taking this episode of The Simpsons story and I'm putting it into this grander story, religious story. Like, I don't know that there's a book out there that kind of does that kind of thing. So it's where I'm coming from. It's a little bit irreverent in that sense, but it's very unique and it's personal and powerful. So I just wanted to throw that out there that, you know, sometimes we can do something. I think if we're going to be sincere and approach it in a unique way, I think it adds a lot of, there's a opportunity for creating a lot of value.
Yeah. Well, and you're doing the thing too, that we were talking about a few minutes ago, where you are doing all this research, you're recognizing the giants whose shoulders you are standing upon. And then you are taking something that none of those writers would have thought to compare it to, but pretty much anybody on planet Earth right now could somehow get to that episode of The Simpsons.
Yeah.
Right. Exactly. Or the number of people that would recognize an episode of The Simpsons now versus in the past when it didn't even exist. Right. So there are things now that have occurred that allow us to perceive things differently than we ever could have in the past. So you did your homework, you did the research, you built on the shoulders of giants. You asked yourself, what is it that I can write about that these guys didn't write about, or these people didn't write about. And the honest truth is that you're Jason and you're going to come up with stuff that's wild. You're going to come up with things that maybe are a little bit irreverent at first, but might very well be the key to getting a concept to internalized, right?
Yeah.
I think that sometimes we take things that are very theoretical and we go, I understand that theoretically, I don't understand it in practice. I don't understand how it would apply to me on a day-to-day basis. And then somebody comes along and uses a metaphor or relates it to The Simpsons. And suddenly you're like, now I can live my life utilizing that.
Yeah.
Because now I internalize
it. It's that sticky thing, like Tess said, that distilling it into a single idea and then using different stories to kind of communicate that. So it's like, oh, that aha moment, I get it. Mm-hmm. So go ahead.
Oh, I heard somewhere that all art is actually recycled and it's all built upon each other, like physical paintings. And I think that kind of plays into this too, of like someone somewhere needs to hear your story, and if you can refer them to that other story, but the way you tell it is going to be unique and hit them in a unique way. So tell the story, even if it's been told before, someone needs to hear it.
Yeah. And they may not have heard it from anyone because they're new, they're younger, or they just haven't exposed themselves to it. So, Tess, let's go ahead and wrap up. How can people connect with you if they want to learn more, they want to read what you're writing, they want to work with you? Tell us about that and who's a good fit to work with you as well.
Yeah, absolutely. I am on LinkedIn quite a bit, Tess Vanney. Okay. And then I also work with Livingston Communication. We have a website, livingstoncontent.com, and we've got a portfolio there, a blog there twice a month, if not more. Yep.
And then what about your personal site with your book blogging?
Well, that one is a little irreverent, but if you are willing to try something a little funky, my morning writing time, it's called Writing Out Loud, okay. Writing Aloud. And I think it's just tessvanney.com is the okay. actual website for it. So yeah, that's a little irreverent, but if you want to try yeah. something different, then there's that. But yeah, I work with medical device, healthcare, and manufacturing clients for marketing content, technical writing, and medical writing.
Okay. And who's a good fit? Like if they're just in that industry and they need writing, or is there more something more specific that they might, a trigger that might go, oh, I should call Tess.
Yeah. One thing that makes like what I do unique is I'm good about communicating hard to talk about things in simple terms. So like if you're having a hard time pulling people into your very technical topic, or if you're having a hard time communicating something difficult, then I'm your girl. You can let me know and I'll help.
Cool. Yeah, that's great. Jim, what about you? How do people connect with you and who's a good fit to work with you?
Sure. My coaching practice is at untangledednarrative.com. People can go there. They can book a session with me or just do a discovery session and talk about things. I'm all over the place and very sporadically on social media, but I think probably the website would be a good place to start. I've been doing an experiment for a while on TikTok, trying to give people terrible advice as a way to keep my improv chops up, since I have been, after COVID, all the improv activities that I had kind of died out. So I do, I'm on there as Jimprovisation, and I somebody will ask a question and then I try my best to give them the worst possible advice on how to solve that. But if you're, if you would know that you would work well with me, as a client, if you have already, clarified what it is that you're trying to do, but for whatever reason, you can't figure out exactly why you're stuck, or maybe you can see why you're stuck, but you can't seem to get unstuck yourself. You have an obstacle that's in your way. And that can be from a writing standpoint. That could be from a life standpoint, career, anything. Most of the people that I work with have some sort of a narrative that they're working with, whether it's in their own mind or it's on the page. They've got something that they're struggling with. And usually working with me is focused on clarifying. And in relationship to this podcast that we just did, atomizing, right? We get things down to the smallest common. Mm-hmm. What can we boil it all the way down to? And then if we look at it from this point, do we still have the same problem, right? Do we still, where are the knots? Where are the tangles in the work that we do? And as Jason and I have talked about a million times, what are the assumptions that we're making? And then questioning those assumptions.
Cool. Well, thank you, Jim. Thank you, Tess, for sharing today on this Listen to Learn topic about the writing process. And anyone has questions, feel free to reach out to Tess or Jim. And we'll have a wonderful day.
Awesome.
Thanks, Jason.
Thanks, Jason.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Share Life. For additional stories and systems to live better and work smarter, visit jasonscottmontoya.com. That's jasonscottmontoya.com. We look forward to having you listen in on the next episode of Share Life.
Are you a freelancer struggling to get clients and sustain an income? Check out Jason Montoya's book, Path of the Freelancer, where he provides the blueprint for mastering freelancing and sustaining a business of one. Start generating a six-figure freelancing income. Get Path of the Freelancer, an actionable guide to flourishing in freelancing, on Amazon today. Are you a small business owner? Have you hit a glass ceiling where year over year, you cannot rise above a certain revenue level? Check out Jason Scott Montoya's book, The Jump, to discover how to level up your leadership and pivot your entrepreneurial passion to the highest level. The Jump from Chaos to Clarity for your striving small business is available on Amazon.